Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for tuning in to The Conversation on this Aloha Friday, August 1st. We consider the state of the film industry. Today, the story of King Kamehameha uniting the Hawaiian Islands streams on Apple TV. We hear from the newly created Hawaii Film Alliance as members look for ways to boost production statewide. We learn about the return of the showdown in Chinatown. The filmmaker challenge makes a comeback after going dark for a decade. We hear from the winners. And the state library system is surveying its patrons who took part in the summer reading challenge. It's come to an end as school starts next week. We drop in on a Big Island library. Plus, we take to sea camp with the hosts of a daily science show on NPR. Tune to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today marks the global debut of Chief of War, a series that tells the story of King Kamehameha's efforts to unite the islands. We invited a board member of the newly created Hawaii Film Alliance to talk about the state of the film industry. For the first time in 2.5 decades, there is no major production, film or television, anchored here in the islands. And that void means those in the local film production industry are struggling to find gigs. Vince Keala Lucero is an independent producer who spoke with us recently about why the alliance was formed. It grew out of frustration that a state bill to raise tax credits for filming in Hawaii died last session.
Now, for the first time in 25 years, there's nothing. And so we formed the alliance to really to create a place, a hub for up-to-date information, also to take a look at, share the stories of the cast and crew, the workers in the industry, to give it a face to these people and try and affect legislation.
And you folks were hoping to increase the tax credits here in Hawaii.
We were, yeah. So if you look at other places where a lot of production is being made, they have tax, their incentives are like 30%. And there's no cap in some places. In other places, there's like a $500 million cap or $800 million cap. For Hawaii, we have a $50 million cap, which really limits us. Jason Momoa, his season one, I believe, was $320 million. And that's almost 7 times the amount. But I was encouraged by the governor when I saw him on the news. He was talking about how Chief of War was amazing for Hawaii. And I agree. I think once people see it, they're going to start learning about our people, our culture. They're going to fall in love with the scenery, make them want to come and visit Hawaii even more. But to do that, he was talking about making, carving out a cultural, I guess, some way to allow cultural productions maybe not to have a cap. And that's what we're hoping at the Alliance.
And the sense that the industry is going through this change because other places like California, right? They're seeing fewer productions in the works over there. And that's Hollywood.
Yeah, but if you look at what Gary Newsom is doing, he raised their cap to 750, I want to say, or maybe it was 500. I'd have to double check. But there, a lot of people are taking it serious. And now that those incentives are better for productions, productions are now starting to come back. Unfortunately, Hawaii, we're still stuck with what we have. But the good news is that we're still open for business. The year's not up. The cap hasn't been reached. And right now, you can have amazing technicians. And everybody's available, for the most part. There is a challenge of some of our best and brightest leaving for the mainland or the continent instead of staying here. And so that's another reason why we really wanted to focus on making changes.
Many moons ago, there was a concerted effort to grow the talent pool, not just on screen, but behind the screen, and folks that are in key positions to make movies, make films, produce, and to write. And we've come a long way. It's something to be proud of.
That's very true. I got introduced into the local filmmaking independent scene through Showdown in Chinatown. And it's great because it gives you an opportunity. Right now, there's a lot of people out of work. less people are busy. And so to hone your skills and to network with other people you enjoy working with, that's how I was introduced and eventually got into the union because of one of those connections. The other thing that's happening, I just think there's independent filmmakers now have a real opportunity because there's a lot of great people out there who are available.
Yeah, we have watched over the years organizations coming in and taking advantage of our wonderful scenery, but telling stories maybe that the people here in these communities maybe thought were off the mark, that didn't quite get it. And so there is also this effort to tell our stories here throughout the Pacific in a really authentic way and not sell out, I guess, maybe
Absolutely.
Is the way to say it. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm encouraged by the efforts of people like Brian Keolana, Angela Pratt, and Robert Suka, who have ICANN. So ICANN came about a few years ago, and their mission was to really train up not just the actors. They started with actors, but they got into producers and directors and writers and really hone the skills of our work base so that we can keep the work in Hawaii. That's also, you mentioned other productions not really being in touch with Hawaiian culture, especially, and portraying us in a positive and authentic light. I think with Chief of War, all that really changed. Jason, being Hawaiian and a producer on the show, made it a point to work with incredible master craftsmen, Lilo Hawaii experts, these really culturally amazing people.
Yeah, cultural advisors, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Who can help guide the story,
yeah.
The narrative.
That's another thing that the Hawaii Film Alliance hopes to do is be that bridge between productions and cultural advisors so that we can portray ourselves as, you know, being more authentic.
There are some folks who caution, though, that by giving away too much on the credit side, you might give away too much.
Oh, tax credits, yeah. If you look at the return on investment, and these numbers are coming from DBIT, $1 from the tax incentive program actually translates into almost $5 in the local economy being spent here. And so last year we had $324 million when Hawaii Five-O and Magnum PI, and we had three shows and movies. It went up to $750 million that was being spent here in Hawaii per year.
We had a conversation with former Governor Ben Kaitanu, who recalled a time with the Hawaii Tourism Authority when they were trying to jumpstart the economy. They had to think outside the box. And one of the investments they made was, I think, $4 million, I believe, for Lilo and Stitch, an animated film about Hawaii. And then in hindsight, you think, wow, that was a good investment when you see Take Two with Lilo and Stitch and how successful that is. I think it takes sometimes people stepping back to say, what else can we do to help the economy?
Yeah, you know, Lilo and Stitch 2 is almost going to make $1 billion, which means a lot of people in the world are going to see this movie and they're learning about Hawaii and they're learning about our people and this story about a little girl who's growing up in Hawaii and this funny little alien. But thinking outside of the box, I think it is absolutely what we need to do. And to be able to tell our stories the right way, especially coming from a Native Hawaiian perspective with us in the driver's seat, is important.
I'm sure probably Jason Momoa would have liked to have cast all Hawaiians in this Hawaiian tale and filmed entirely here in Hawaii.
Yeah.
But he's pragmatic. He's got to figure out what's going to work.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, Jason did absolutely want to shoot everything here and cast all Native Hawaiians for sure. That's the studio system. It's an industry problem. And until we get people who think outside of the box, we have to wait until we get better actors. We have a handful of great actors, but no one with the experience of people like Tamora Morrison or Cliff Curtis who can really bring that depth of acting in these very emotional scenes. But what ICANN is doing and other entities, HFA included, we hope to really uplift our actors to get to that point. And we have some projects. Well, I personally have a few projects in development that we're hoping to do exactly that.
Yeah, you know, critics might say that might be racist to want to have. Mm. At the end of the day, you may just want the best actor, right?
Yeah, true. And the studio is creating this to make money. It's a business. It's not philanthropy. ultimately comes down to they have to make money. They're putting their best pieces on the board to do so.
Do you think Jason Momoa would consider, if this series is successful, somehow working to get back here so that the filming is in Hawaii?
I do. I really do. His ohana is from Nanakuli. His dad actually went to high school with my mom, Nanakuli High. But he has a lot of cousins here. He has a lot of friends here. He loves Hawaii. I know that he does enjoy New Zealand as well. So that's something that we have to look at, because hopefully he'll do it more here, but we'll see.
So anything else that you want to drive home about this alliance and how members of the industry, I guess they want the same thing at the end of the day, but yeah, it's just how best to do it.
Yeah, I just want to say to our industry workers, I know it's tough right now, there's nothing going on, but industry people were tough, and tough times don't last. So just hang in there. The HawaiiFilmAlliance.org is a site people can visit, even if you're not in the industry. You just want to check out what's happening and learn some of the math that's going on, some of our initiatives. It's a place of support for people, for producers as well, people bringing projects to the islands. And we really just want to uplift and support our industry, make it a better place.
All right. Well, Keala, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing your story.
Mahalo nui. Thank you for your time.
That was independent producer Vince Keala Lucero talking to us about doubling down on the effort to bolster our film industry with the creation of the Hawaii Film Alliance. Well, it is the first of the month, so we're going to be right back after a test of the emergency alert system. Stay with us. You know, we continue shining the spotlight on our local film industry with something called the Showdown in Chinatown, a 48-hour filmmaking contest returned to Honolulu last weekend after a 10-year hiatus. 20 teams submitted films that had to include a lighter and the line of dialogue. Have you ever cared so much that ... Well, you get it. Well, their projects were then judged by a panel of industry veterans, including Henry Ian Cusick and Moses Goods. Today, we talked to the team behind a film that won both the Judges' Choice and Audience Choice Awards. The short film is titled Split Ends, and it takes place inside an audition room. Take a listen to a scene. You'll hear the sound of a cigarette lighter flicking open and closed.
Have you ever cared so much that you'd give up your life to become it?
Again.
Have you ever cared so much that you'd give up your life to become it?
Your mom's not calling you this week. Not this week. Say the line again.
Have you ever cared so much that you'd give up your life to become it?
She's not calling next week either. Or the week after that. Say the line again.
Have you ever cared so much that you'd give up yourself to become it?
Say the line again.
Have you ever cared so much that you'd give up yourself to become it?
What are you gonna do about it? Slice your leg open?
The creative team behind the film consists of Deva Escobar, Huapili Mossman, Rosalio Hernandez, and Asia Kaaumoana. They wrote, directed, and edited from their home base on the Big Island. The Conversation's Maddie Bender spoke with Escobar, Mossman, and Hernandez about the challenges facing the local film industry.
I think it's how our state treats film. I think they've been working really hard. People in the industry have been working really hard to try to get our state legislature to try to raise the tax incentive so that people are more motivated to film here, which I think is the biggest thing, because we have so much talent and we have so much capacity, but people don't take us seriously because they haven't seen our work. And so I think that if we had more capacity to make great things here with a better budget, we'd be able to hire more local talent so that more local talent is seen. And then I think that misconception would be alleviated.
I also feel like it's a cultural thing where a lot of local artists and local actors on stage in film, they beat themselves up a lot and they take one criticism. And I know it's a cultural thing because I feel it as a native Hawaiian as well, but it's in the culture where there's shame when you don't get something the first time, and there's shame when you're trying for something and plenty of people are telling you you can't do it. And I know that holds a lot of us down, and it is on us as locals, as Hawaiians, as native people of the land to kind of break through that stereotype of it's okay to fail. It's okay to not book your first show, book your first gig. There's no shame in that. The shame is stopping and the shame is not continuing. There is of course, lack of eyes on us at all times, which is super junk. But, you know, if we keep pushing and we keep putting ourselves out there, then there should be nothing but success in the future for us.
It almost seems to me like something like Showdown in Chinatown is myth busting, is getting rid of that misconception that there isn't local talent. And Deva, you shared that you heard about this on social media. Give me the play-by-play of how you got this team together and created your award-winning short film.
Award-winning.
Ooh, I like the sound of that. So it really helps that Rosalio is my boyfriend because we share a room. So I'm just like, hey, you want to make a film? And he's like, I don't know. And then I'm a nag, so I kept pushing it. And he's like, okay. And Peely's down for anything. So it was pretty easy. And yeah, we just dropped everything. We wrote for a few hours the night before, and we spent like a couple hours filming, put it together, and it felt pretty magical. I think it's what all of us want to be doing. It definitely helps that Rosalio is a writer because he's constantly studying. He's listening to podcasts on it. Every time we get in the car, I'm like, can you turn that off? I want to just be quiet. So he's like a mastermind with scripts. So he always has ideas in his back pocket. And so it wasn't too hard to write things, you know, because as an actor, I think it was a pretty easy concept because only two of us were going to be acting in it. And as actors know, the best two-person scene is the one in the audition room with the director and the actor. And we went through a variety of concepts, but that seemed to reach home the most and seemed to be the most resonant to probably others as well.
Rosalio, add to that, you know, set the stage, tell the listener what this is all about and how you brought it to life.
It was a team effort. Like Dave and I were in the room, Peely was on the phone, and we were talking like to midnight to come up with the idea. There's this urban legend that Stanley Kubrick abused Shelley Duvall. Stanley Kubrick is the director of The Shining, and Shelley Duvall is the actress who played Wendy. I don't know if it's true or not, but there's like an urban legend that he abused her just to get the performance out. So we were like, what if it was like that in the audition room? So that sort of sprang the split ends.
Yeah, and as an actor, you know that you often will go to any extent to get the role, which is, you know, often unfortunate. I mean, I've dove 40 feet underwater without training for the shot. So like in former films, so, you know, you'll do often ridiculous things, often method things, which is controversial to form your art.
And it was so cool just seeing like the prompt itself. And because this is my first 48 hour or any kind of film challenge that I've done. And it was just so cool, like getting all of these things that you have to hit. And then boom, Rosie's calling me on the phone and we're brainstorming. What can we do here? What can we do here? Oh, there's a lighter. How do we put a lighter in here? Oh, a Zippo makes noise. Let's throw that in there. It was such a cool process of just minds moving as fast as they can to see what is possible in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I think if you're pushed into a corner, you become more creative. So because of that 48-hour time limit, creativity just sparks. So it was sparks were flying that night, and we just came up with that idea.
Were there any corners you had to cut, or when thinking about some of the aspects of creativity that you brought to this, like a lot of it is problem solving, I bet. So give just an example of that.
I would say probably for our script, we had a good outline of our script, but we didn't have time to write a distinct one. So it was a combination of our outline and improv, which also felt amazing. It was very freeing because it allowed us to really live in the characters. But as an actor, it's nice to have a script, less pressure. I should also add that we only used two backdrops and a table and two chairs. And it was all just about cheating it to make it look like a studio.
A question for Ho'opili and Deva. What did you guys think seeing the edited film for the first time? What was your first reaction?
Sometimes it's hard to watch yourself, right? Especially because this film is a bit emotional. So you're just like, oh my God, why are my eyes doing that? Or, but it actually felt really amazing because it didn't feel like watching ourselves. It felt like we were bouncing off each other with a lot of energy, and Pee-wee was amazing to act with. I honestly felt really proud, which is not something I always get to say watching myself, just because he was so excellent to work with and Roselio did such an amazing job filming, and Asia was such a great help as well. So yeah. Lots of pride.
David Rowe doesn't give her enough. She doesn't give herself enough credit with how amazing.
Ew, no.
I thought it was amazing. Just because we are such a small team, because we kind of had all our hands in all these pots at the same time. Let's be real. Roselio was editing maybe a foot away from us the entire time.
He didn't get up for 5 hours.
For 5 hours. I took a picture at the beginning and I was like, this was 5 hours ago and he hasn't moved. Throughout the entire editing process, there were many times where Roselio took his headphones off and he was like, okay, guys, take a look at this. And we'd watch maybe 3/4 of it and we'd all be looking at each other like, this is something, you guys. This is like actually really crazy.
He's also such a perfectionist. So he'd be like 5 seconds into showing us and he's like, oh, wait, nope, nope, nope. And he'd make us stop watching and fix it again.
But there were just so many instances where we're like, wow, I feel uncomfortable. I'm in this scene and I feel uncomfortable. I'm the one making her feel uncomfortable and I'm uncomfortable. So it was seeing ourselves and just Deva and I have such a great rapport and only tooting our own horns, but we have such a great chemistry with each other. Like as friends, we riff all the time and we just shoot ideas, anything that's on our head all the time. So seeing it on screen in such like a serious setting and a serious topic, it just worked. And we looked at each other and we're like, wow, this really just works.
I think there's something so powerful when you create art and you can tell that it's greater than the sum of its parts. And then I feel like we can't leave out the actual process of getting it to the screening, right? Because you're all on Hawaii Island. So how'd that work?
We weren't going to let anything stand in our way. We even considered flying out. But no, luckily I have some actor friends in Oahu who were willing to help out. I called up my friend Lauren and I was like, hey, I have this thing. Are you willing to use your jump drive and drop it off? You get 2 comp tickets. And she was like, oh yeah, say no more. And she was amazing and dropped it off for me. And she ended up attending and she was just sending us live footage while it was happening. And finally she's just like, hey, you guys won. And we're like, what? Like, not what we were expecting. We were just stoked to participate. And I think we really just wanted to show that Big Island is just as much a part of the film industry as Oahu is. And we really want to kind of bridge that and just create a camaraderie. And so I've enjoyed going over to Oahu here and there to work with people over there because I think we're all Hawaii people and we're all in it together.
Do you remember what some of the feedback from the judges were, like the kinds of things people who watched it said about it?
Well, my favorite video was from a friend named Soraya, and she was there and she sent me just a clip of people afterwards going, wow, like whispering, wow. And that was the biggest compliment ever. I've saved that video and I'll probably rewatch it like from now on just because it's such an ego boost, you know, when you're so hard on yourself to hear people who are feeling your art. I think that's the biggest compliment, even though art should come from within and be most rewarding within. It just feels good to have that validation. And also, it was really funny to see the judges looking around for us when they were trying to give out awards. And I'm like, I'm so sorry.
I do keep watching that video that Deva showed us. We hear people saying, wow, and just murmuring with each other and like in awe. And we're like, wow, you guys get it. Thank you for getting it.
Yeah. And I feel like because so many industry people were there, there's that like silent knowing of what they've also gone through in the industry, you know, whether they've firsthand gone through it or they know somebody. I have a friend who I've acted with before who used to do a lot of things, and she's older now and she's been probably through thousands of auditions, and she's like, that's exactly how I felt. And that makes me feel very honored, because it's dealing with vulnerable emotional territory that maybe I haven't experienced but others can resonate with, because, you know, art either comforts the disturbed or it disturbs the comfortable or it makes you feel seen.
Is there anything else about this whole process or this team or this film that you want listeners to know?
Keep pursuing your dreams. I'm just going to keep it simple. Just keep pursuing your dreams. Just go for it.
Yeah. And I think everybody in Hawaii who's in the industry is just as serious about the industry as those on the mainland. And we deserve a fair shot. And we are going to be making our work known throughout our islands. And we won't give up. And everybody's working tirelessly. I follow so many people from the industry and I see how hard they work. So much goes on behind the scenes. And I'm excited to see where everything goes with everybody, because I know big things are coming.
I would say don't let your set limitations limit you. I cannot stress enough where we were so intimidated by so many like behind the scenes shots of like, oh my goodness, like look at all these, this place is in a restaurant, this place is on a street. And we turn and look at each other and we're like, we're in my living room with two sheets and a table, and let's just crank this out and let's act our ass off. Sometimes that's all it takes, is four people, two sheets and a table, and we can pump out a story that's rival to none. So I think the big thing is don't limit yourself. Even though we're on an island, even though we are in a living room, it doesn't count us out yet.
Those were the makers of the short film Split Ends. They won a film contest, The Showdown in Chinatown. It was a challenge to create a film in just 2 days. We'll have behind-the-scenes photos and more on our website after the show.
Enjoy classical music in person with Hawaii Public Radio's Live from the Atherton Concert Series. Over 4 Saturdays starting August 9th, enjoy performances from Clara Kim, Alex Hayashi and Shuo Lee, Megan Conley, and the Honolulu Brass Quintet. Learn more at hprtickets.org, sponsored by HMSA.
On the next Science Friday, guess what? You don't need to break a sweat to feel the psychological benefits of exercise.
So it's not the old, you have to do 20 minutes, you have to raise your heart rate to a certain level. We know from a lot of research that you can get by with much less.
How and why exercise can boost your mental health on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Liberation Day, take 2. President Donald Trump just announced new tariffs for countries around the world. Add to that this morning's lackluster jobs report, and the economic outlook is once again looking increasingly uncertain. Stocks were down sharply at the close of markets, and we thought it would be a good time to check in to see how economic forces are affecting everyday life. The Conversation's D.W. Gibson met up with Mark from Waikele after he finished a recent shop at Tokyo Central in Kailua. It's the latest installment of What's in Your Cart.
Well, we bought some Hawaiian Sun for the Keikis, and then we got some water, we got a cake for the Keikis, and we got a six-pack of beer.
So.
Not for the cakey.
Not for the cakeys. Definitely not for the cakeys, yeah.
Now, what's the cake? Is it a special occasion?
No, just today's Friday, you know, get together. Aloha Friday.
I love it, a Friday cake. Nice.
Yeah.
How do you feel about prices in general these days? Do you feel like things are more expensive than you want them to be, or they're holding steady? Or
no, they're more expensive. We all know inflation and prices going up every time and tariffs and stuff like that, yeah, so.
Well, so do you have any tricks in terms of containing your cost?
Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, I went and asked my boss for a raise. Yeah, so if he doesn't give it to me, I'm going to go. You know, no, just kidding. But yeah, no, you got to, you know, always work hard and make sure you go to work and, you know, get a steady job.
And that's interesting. So when you asked your boss for the raise, did you mention like, hey, cost of living is going up?
Actually, when I did get a raise, he did, you know, we did talk about it. And yes, I did mention about the inflation, rents going up and stuff like that, car insurance. Yes, and he accommodated. So, yeah.
So he already gave you the raise?
Yes, he did.
Fantastic. That sounds like a good boss.
He is. He really is.
Yeah. Because it seems like one of the fundamental problems is that stuff is getting more expensive, which is understandable. Life gets more expensive, but people aren't getting paid more, right? That seems like that was your experience until you decided to ask for more money.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But it really depends on the company and the boss, you know, and, you know, the president and stuff like that, the company. Really depends on how business is going. As we all know that, yeah, business is important. So our customers are important to us. So we always got to keep our customers satisfied in order for us to have good business, right? So, yeah.
What kind of work do you do?
I work for Atmore, and we're the HVAC industry.
Nice. How are you feeling about the economy generally moving forward? What do you think the next year will look like?
I really hope for the better, you know. I hope prices do go down and houses are more affordable and stuff like that, yeah.
It's all tied together, right? Wages, housing, food, it all comes together, right?
It sure does.
That was Mark from Waikele talking to HPR's D.W. Gibson outside of Tokyo Central. How's the economy affecting you? Drop us a line at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Well, students are heading back to the classroom, so summer's over. But usually during the summer, you know, we try and get in a few summer reads. And today we are highlighting the State Library's Summer Reading Challenge. Here to talk about that is our contributing reporter, Betsy Brown. Hi, Betsy.
Good morning, Catherine.
Yeah, so tell us, what did you find out over there on the Big Island?
Well, I've participated in the Summer Reading Challenge many times, especially as a kid. Libraries, not just in Hawaii, but all over, do this. But I found this year when I went to the Mountain View Library to sign up with my son that they also had a calendar full of events. Every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, they had something special going on. And most of the activities, they didn't even really have anything to do with reading or books. So I spoke with the branch manager there at my library in Mountain View. Her name's Jane Henn. And she told me why this is.
Two goals. One is to, of course, inspire people to read, read, read. No matter what you're reading, please read. And if you're reading materials from us, even better. The second one is to have people return to their library. You know, libraries these days are not just four walls. There's plenty of resources that you have access to without even leaving your house. But we'd love to see your smiling faces. We'd love you to know that your brick and mortar buildings are still here for you.
Well, you know, I know the libraries have a special place in my heart. I just love books. But I know that this year, you know, they were trying to get like, oh, gosh, 25,000 folks to sign up. And they were debuting, I think, a new library card, too.
Yeah, they actually just launched a new logo. And so Jane did tell me a lot of these events go with that theme of get people to come back and enjoy their libraries. Now, this year, the theme was a helu helu ke kau mele. And of course, mele means music and helu helu means to read. And so there were a lot of music themed events. In Mountain View, they offered free ukulele lessons for keiki and adults every week. And you could also check out instruments. I believe a lot of libraries in the state actually have those available if you're interested. But students left most of the lessons with books and they weren't music books. they checked out books about things like the history of ukulele. And that's something that Jane says the library actually planned for.
If they come to a program, maybe it's something that interests them originally. We always try to have some materials at the ready that sort of go with the theme or inspire you to go beyond, you know, whatever you've experienced here.
That's great.
And the events, Catherine, they weren't just for kids. And that's something else that caught my attention, because the adults had their own ukulele class, but there was also a Mahjong Players Club that met every Friday. And that was really popular. It gained interest throughout the summer. They were adding tables and getting more tiles. But there were also things outside for the kids at the same time, so the whole family could come. But outside, they were playing sidewalk games. And Jane and another one of the library staff, Amber, told me it's because they want to see kids get off their phones.
Working with kids these days, and so many busy families, there's a lot of screen time that kids are spending. And whatever your opinion about that is, getting kids outside, building sportsmanship, making friends in a social venue that isn't necessarily digital, that was our goal.
Yeah, those are great ideas. I mean, you know, you get folks out there and then get them to check out a book about the history of Mahjong or whatever it is. That's great.
Exactly. And the kids had a lot of fun in those outdoor games. And I saw the grownups having fun afterward. And like we mentioned, people did check out more books. And I went to several of the activities myself and with my son. And I found a lot of the same people were coming to more than one event, and they were coming pretty regularly. One of them was Mary Crawford, and she came with her granddaughters. They're ages 3 and 10. She says the library became a really comfortable place for them over the summer.
Yeah, they're really anxious to come to the library, and they love the picking out their books right away and then doing the activities and then meeting their friends at the library. But they're getting into wanting to read a lot more now.
Yeah, I remember I used to love Saturday morning story time hour. That was my favorite as a kid.
Yeah, and they had things for kids of all ages. On Tuesdays, they had We Love Music, which was more for toddlers. And then they had a sing-along craft time that kids of all ages enjoyed. And of course, the ukulele lessons were really good for the older kids as well. And I mentioned the music theme. This also created an opportunity for special events. And I know some of the HBR staff, when they were on Maui recently, they saw Jeff Peterson, and he was there to perform at some of the libraries there. But here on Hawaii Island, the Kenny Endo Ensemble came and they played taiko drums. And I spoke with Kenny about why he thought this was important, and he told me.
Just going around to these everyday communities and meeting everyday people is just wonderful. If it encourages people to read and educate themselves and be literate, I think it's great. And especially for the kids, for them to realize all the resources out there is really fantastic. And hopefully they'll have some type of a passion that they really want to do, and it'll stick with them for life.
Yes, and Kenny's having quite a year. I think he marks his 50th year doing taiko drum. So he's going all over the state.
Yeah, he sure is. And the kids had a good time with this. He actually invited some of them up to try out the drums at the end of the program. So that was really fun to watch.
So do we know how many people these challenges actually drew into the libraries?
Well, the program wrapped up at midnight, so it just ended. The numbers are still being finalized. They did have a pretty big goal. So far, they know that at least 23,000 people did sign up for the program. Now, of course, the participants log hours throughout the time of how often they're reading and which books they read, and that enters them for different prizes. The grand prize this year is, again, 4 round-trip tickets from Alaska Airlines, which would be really cool to win, of course.
Yeah, it's great.
So the challenge is over now, but there's still going to be plenty of activities in the libraries. Jane mentioned to me that she'd like to continue some of the things that they started in the summer throughout the school year, but she said she's really open to input from the community, and I'm sure that extends to libraries throughout the state if there's something you'd like to see.
obviously the big push to remind people that our libraries are there in our community and to create magnets to get people to come out and hang out together and read books and have fun. Thanks so much, Betsy.
Aloha. Thank you.
We've been hearing from our contributing reporter, Betsy Brown, there on the Big Island. Look for her stories on hawaiipublicradio.org. The NPR Daily Podcast Shortwave tells stories about science in bite-sized packages, just under 15 minutes. In the summer, hosts Emily Kwong and Regina Barber dive into our oceans for a weekly series that they're calling Sea Camp. They explore topics like deep-sea mining and the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Take a listen to a recent episode on the ocean's Twilight Zone.
We're diving into the Twilight Zone of the ocean. That's 200 to 1,000 meters below the surface, or about 650 to more than 3,000 feet. And it's where the sunlight is still present, but it's very dim.
The Twilight Zone. I love this name. It makes me think of one of my favorite TV shows. Is it mysterious like the show is?
It is. Noelle Boland, the marine biologist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, who we met last week, says we don't know a lot about the Twilight Zone because of its depth, which is also known as the mesopelagic zone.
It is hard for us to access it. As you can imagine, there's great amounts of pressure, there's not a lot of oxygen, and it's deep.
So humans aren't exploring down there very often?
No. However, during World War II, militaries were using sonar to look for enemy submarines in the ocean, in the Twilight Zone, hundreds of meters below the surface. And some of the people looking noticed something kind of odd.
The signal coming back was it was as if they were bouncing the sound off the bottom of the ocean.
But that didn't make any sense because the bottom of the ocean should have been farther away.
Mm-hmm.
And even weirder,
it seemed like the bottom was moving up.
What?
Yeah.
Scientists would eventually learn that they were seeing the largest synchronous migration on Earth.
Wow.
When a massive amount of Twilight Zone living organisms come up and travel to the shallows to feed under the cover of night's darkness.
In the conversations, Maddie Bender spoke with the two co-hosts, Emily Kwong and Regina Barber, about Sea Camp.
Sea Camp, it gives me the image of being a kid going on boats, learning to sail, all that during the summer. But
you nailed it. That's exactly it, Maddie.
Yeah, so how'd that idea come about, and what was the brainstorming process like?
Yeah, basically,
Gina and I, though we both grew up on the coasts, I think at times felt estranged from the ocean. It's this big, mysterious place. It's a place of respect and history and culture. And reporting in Alaska and living among Indigenous Alaskans, Native Alaskans really taught me that. And how to protect the ocean with the best and latest science is really the goal of this series, but to do it in an adventuresome way. So every Monday on the shortwave feed, so wherever you listen to podcasts, you'll get a new episode. We start at the surface, and then we go down in our little imaginary submarine to the Twilight Zone, the Midnight Zone, the Abyssal Zone, then the seafloor. We talk about the perils of deep sea mining. Right. And we teach you ways that you can just have a visual understanding of what's happening down there and how it connects to life on land. Because oceans, Hawaiians know this, I mean, produces half of the oxygen we breathe. It's a carbon sink. It's a shopping cart. It's livelihood. It's everything. So we wanted to bring that love for the ocean to a bigger audience.
I mean, we did space camp last year. It was really, really fun. We were in a metaphorical spaceship in that case.
Yes.
Going from like Earth to the...
We love being in pods.
Yes, to the end of the universe. So we wanted to do something similar and we couldn't do space camp again. We wanted to do something that was more down to Earth, literally, you know, but in the ocean. So that's what we decided to do this year.
I mean, you can always do space camp again, but I understand.
We have talked about it.
Yeah. But this is like, it's like camp for adults. You learn.
Sure.
Yeah.
It could be Dino Camp. We're thinking.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's an exclusive. That's a scoop. We were thinking about that.
Yeah.
Nice. What is one thing that each of you learned about the ocean in reporting this series?
It definitely reframed something I thought I knew. I was very obsessed with one of the moons of Jupiter, Europa, which is like covered in ice, but underneath we think there's an ocean. So I was obsessed with it as a kid, thinking that there might be life in those oceans, like there's life in our oceans way, way away from the sun, but, you know, deep in the ocean next to these like hydrothermal vents, these hot spots in the ocean, there are these like little shrimp and other animals. So I thought maybe that could exist in like these moons of Jupiter. And I went around, now that I had this job, I have the resources to talk to whoever I wanted. And I was like, who's actually studying this? Who's an astrobiologist? I found out that it's a way more complicated story than I thought. This idea that life could have started in these deep parts of the ocean is really, really hotly debated. And it's a good episode that's in this Sea Camp series.
Yeah. Emily.
The thing that has got me really rethinking our relationship to the ocean is this episode we did that's already out, you can listen to it right now, about the North Pacific garbage patch. Trash that humans make is constantly getting dumped into the ocean. It tends to circulate around these five gyres. And the North Pacific garbage patch, also known as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, is not just a garbage patch anymore. It has been around for so long, it's like the size of Texas, that it is home to a whole ecosystem of marine life. Called Neustans, and they have a food web amongst themselves, and they are part of this larger ecosystem in their region. And so it might not be wise to just go indiscriminately cleaning up trash in the ocean that uses a lot of fossil fuels to get boats out there to drag the trash back. Where would you then put it? And actually, what we really should be focusing on is not putting trash into waterways in the first place and having better waste management systems, having a fishing industry that's more sustainable. Because once the trash is out there, our time is better spent just preventing it from getting there in the first place. And I think that's a real shift in consciousness about how we live with our oceans. The best thing we can do actually is our actions on land, keeping rivers clean, keeping waterways clean, and respecting the ocean once things go out there.
Yeah, I loved that episode. And people in Hawaii will know that the North Pacific garbage patch is the reason that there is trash on many beaches in Hawaii. Like it's not coming locally. And some researchers are doing great work into basically microplastics forensics, being able to say, where did this piece of plastic that washed up on our beach actually come from? But you're right that we're kind of in this together, that there's only so much help that finger pointing can really do there. One thing I have always admired about shortwave is just the tone, the curiosity, and kind of inspiration that you bring to the show. And I wonder how you feel your role evolving as you do your job spotlighting scientists, and so many of these researchers have been impacted by federal funding cuts or their work is at risk for that. So how to marry the tone that you've always taken with the reality of where science is right now?
I'm going to let Gina answer because Gina is actually a scientist who then became a journalist. So yeah, Gina.
Yeah. So I have a lot of friends. You know, I was in that world for over a decade. I mean, longer than that, probably two decades if you count my schooling. And it's really hard, but it's, you know, we are journalists. And it, for me, becoming an academic and then coming a journalist, like, how do you stay fair? How do you investigate without like showing bias? We are doing an episode on the NASA budget cuts because I have a lot of contacts and sources that's really affecting them. Emily has done episodes on other science cuts to the, you know, the health, NIH. I think what we try to do is we don't let go of all the happier, joyful, kind of uplifting episodes, but every once in a while we do put in policy, you know, as much as we can. And we do bring in reporters at NPR who are doing those stories too, because we're not doing all of them. We're not even doing the majority of them, the science policy stories. So we invite those reporters on to do episodes for us too. So we're trying our best to kind of get the best reporting onto the podcast without overloading people and without paralyzing people, but just to kind of inform them.
I think that's a fabulous answer. And I think, you know, a lot of these scientists, you call them up and it's like, how are you doing? And they're like, very bad. But then when you talk about the thing that they love and the thing that they've dedicated their whole life to studying, they totally brighten up. And so I think as science, as it's been done, is being reshaped in the US, creating a space for scientists to share what they know and for that to be respected is like really what we want to do on Shortwave. And we really believe science is for everyone, that you shouldn't need a college education to understand it. And I think scientists can do a better job of communicating what they know to a general audience and taking it out of some of these institutions and these ivory tower ways of communicating. I'm hopeful that science can transform how it's always been done for the better. And we're in just a very, very painful period right now. But I hope it will come out the other side with, it might take a long time, but with better public understanding of science, because the way it's been done clearly is under attack.
Two episodes, as we're taping, two episodes have already dropped, six to go. What are you most excited for listeners to hear?
There's some really weird marine life that we meet. There are invertebrates with superpowers. There are massive fish migrations. I mean, if you are a little bit tired of life on land right now, you can escape. You can lose yourself in some of these images and stories and be reminded that you are but one species on this planet.
We were hearing from NPR hosts Emily Kwong and Regina Barber. They spoke with HBR's Maddie Bender about Sea Camp, a series releasing episodes weekly on Mondays throughout the summer. They also have sea-themed comics and a newsletter. Learn more at npr.org/seacamp. Well, that does it for this Aloha Friday. Coming up next week, we embrace Maui memories as we come up on the two-year mark of the wildfires. Got a Maui memory that you would like to share? Call us and record something on our talkback line, 808-792-8217, or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Want to listen back to something you heard? Find the conversation on Spotify, Apple, or on our website. Our program is a team effort. Thanks to D.W. Gibson, Lillian Song, and Maddie Bender. Additional thanks to Savannah Harriman-Pote and our HPR digital team. Our summer intern is Laura Dukes. Backyard quiz theme written for us by John DeMello. Theme music courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation.